Supervisor Chris, want to lead us in the flag salute?
Absolutely. All right, pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Chaplain Mason.
Let us pray. O God, our Creator, we thank you for the blessings that you have given us, and we ask you to continue to bless all the people of our county, Siskiyou County. And we ask you to bless and guide this board that has been entrusted with decisions and leadership. And we ask your blessing on all the departments that serve with them to help in every way. Please guide this meeting with your wisdom. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you, Chaplain.
The board will be convening today as the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, County Service Area 3, and County Service Area 4, and receives no additional compensation. And we'll do roll call. Supervisor Haupt?
Present.
Supervisor Kopsaff?
Here.
Supervisor Chris?
Present.
Supervisor Ogren?
Present.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Here's a click, and I'm also sure I'm in the room. Put that in the notes.
Okay,
we've got time for presentations from the public. This time slot is for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You'll be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. When written comments can be presented, if so desired, by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. When addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to your comments. Please address the board as a whole through the chair. Comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. Dimitri Fork.
He just stepped out.
Okay, we'll come back to him. Bob Caster.
Can Mike go first? He kind of dovetail our piece.
Sure, Mike, do you want to?
Hello, I'm Mike Griffintini. I have a Facebook page called Siskiyou Historic Tours, and so I give historic tours. I live at 2903 Wasson Court, Montague, California. Years ago, I attended Wairika High School and often walked downtown to the courthouse right here, where my mother worked. She was a county clerk right there. Then I would catch a ride home with her at the end of the day. Each time I entered the courthouse, my attention was captured by its gold display. I dreamed of finding pieces as large as the nuggets behind the glass. Frequently, while perusing the display, I saw other people doing the same. Some were locals, but others had come from outside the area. Years later, the well-known TV celebrity, Huell Hauser, produced the California Gold episode in Siskiyou County, and of course, it highlighted the collection that we had right here. We all know the tragic occurrence called the Great Gold Heist. Bob Caster, who will be speaking next, wrote a book about the event. I think he even brought a copy of the book. In it, I learned that part of the collection still exists, apparently. Being a lover of local history, I might be biased by saying that we are making a mistake by not re-exhibiting what remains of the gold. A future display might tell the whole story of the gold for the viewers to ponder, including the efforts that the early officials and residents took to acquire the amazing collection, the road trips that the collection took through the 1900s, collecting many awards throughout the state in the process. The gold heist itself and the decision to redisplay the remains. I think it's a very amazing story. Siskiyou County is crying out for ideas or things to help with its revitalization. The heart and soul of Wairika is its Old West Gold Rush history. The gold collection personifies that Old West history. That is why I believe it is a mistake not to redisplay the gold. A new display should be a significant tourist draw, and combined with Western events would provide fun and educational reasons to come to our county. It should also give locals a sense of renewed pride in our early day history. This proposal requires addressing financial and security concerns. Regardless, let's seriously consider it before discarding the proposal. There may be creative means to address factors that may, at first glance, appear prohibitive. Thank you very much. for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Castor.
Good morning. I'm Bob Castor. I've lived in Wairika for more than 51 years. I'm here to support Mike's proposal that the remaining gold be placed on display. It's rumored that what is left may not be display worthy, but even if that's true, it's still a part of an ongoing story that dates back to the 1850s. We appreciate that there could be significant risks, but that shouldn't shut down the conversation. A few years ago, I wrote a book called The Great Wairika Courthouse Gold Heist, which was published by the Siskiyou County Historical Society. One reason I wrote the story was to dispel conspiracy theories claiming that the theft was an inside job staged by people within the county government, including the Board of Supervisors, to get the insurance money to pay the county's bills. A highly regarded security alarm didn't deploy when the burglars ineptly bashed a hole in the display case with a fire extinguisher they had liberated from the downstairs hallway. But those facts are part of the history and should be part of a display along with the gold itself. Today, 11 years later, these conspiracy theories still exist, plus new ones concerning what's left of the gold. People wonder if it too has disappeared and is unaccounted for, or if it's been sold and the proceeds spent by the county or someone. We'd like to make this a board agenda item, but it's difficult without more information. We've been told that to get on the agenda and make a proposal needs to be wrapped up in a package with specific details, how much it'll cost, where will it be located, what kind of security. That's kind of hard to do when it's a secret as to whether it's actually there or if it's there at all and what its value is. We're asking that the county begin a conversation about the idea. We suggest the county appoint maybe a working group or ad hoc committee to inventory what's there and brainstorm some ideas for what to do with it. I would be happy to volunteer to serve on such a committee, and I'm sure Mike would also. The gold was given to the county in trust going back to before the turn of the 19th century to be displayed in a manner that the citizens of Siskiyou County would take pride in. For it to be locked away in some secret place without any future plan is a violation of that trust. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, Dimitri Bork.
Hi, everybody. My name is Dimitri Bork, and I apologize for my English. It's my first language. Okay. So, real fast, you know, I came here several times and I walk away because I deal with government a lot in the area. What happened is you guys shut down Airbnbs at Kopka Lake, and in my case, it was a tiny house, and I had a checkbook ready, you know, to pay all the bills, but apparently it was not allowed to have tiny houses, and it's perfectly fine property. It's like over 20 acres, you know, more than 2.5 acres, with 500 yards of waterfront and access to BLM. And I purchased this tiny home on the wheels in Oregon, so CHP made sure Dimitri not in business of stolen trailers, so they gave me license plate. And so the building department not allowing us to have these tiny houses. And city of Wairika just approved, I believe, you know, tiny houses in their city. Maybe you guys will look at that because it's too expensive to build anything right now, especially with taking dams down, so we don't know what's gonna happen. It's gonna be kind of crazy to invest hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I stayed myself several times in different states in tiny houses, and they're perfectly fine. And I know the law of California, but you know, tiny house can be rented as a long-term rental. And if you get a chance, you go home, you know, go to Airbnb and look at the unique places they have, like tree houses, you know, yurts, buses, and people love this stuff. So just my suggestion to you, okay? I really appreciate your time. And
you.
The other thing is, you know, we don't want to go burden on government, and you guys are losing money right now, too. because this place just sits there, you know, not doing nothing. And it's going to get overgrown, and, you know, maybe I'll sell it, and people will jump it like marijuana growers to run this place. And by the way, this kind of property I have that has water, electricity, and septic, it was already in place when I purchased it. So it's not like people going to poop, you know, in the forest. It's perfectly fine. It's just a tiny house on the woods. All right? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hopefully you stick around. Item 13A is talking about vacation rentals. Maybe within that we can talk about tiny houses and how that plays out.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, anyone online?
Okay.
Through the chair.
Yes.
Ms. Davis, could we agendize with regard to the goal that we still have at another meeting to be able to publicly talk about what is going on with the gold? Yes, it's in a vault as far as we know, and the treasurer and the auditor are the ones that have access to it. But I think the public should be aware of what the county did with the insurance money from that was stolen, the current condition of the gold, we can't say where it's at since it's vaulted, but give the public an awareness of what has been done, what you know. I know that we don't seem to have a future. I know that the new courthouse, we've talked about having a gold display over there, but I think that went kind of somewhere when Supervisor Bennett left. But at any rate, I think we should agendize it so the public can be informed as to what's going on with it.
You know, I think that's one of those fun items that we should have a discussion. Maybe when you think that there's a light agenda item, we can have that initial discussion. Tell them it's in a bank vault. Can't tell them the bank? Is that couldn't tell them the bank?
We don't even know the bank.
Right. So, but anyways, let's put that on the agenda somewhere down there. All right, we move on to item 5A, consent agenda. Anyone from the board wish to pull how many items? Preferably none.
I've got 5M.
5N or M?
M.
M is the
mayor.
Anyone else?
So move for the rest of the balance.
Second for the balance.
Okay. Just give me a sec here. All righty. Supervisor Hell?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbsett?
Aye.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Supervisor
Cobbsett?
Good morning.
Good morning.
So in the letter that is written to Rural Communities Housing Development Corporation, just so I'm clear on what this is a 3% loan over 55 years, is that correct? And is that what we're charging? Or who gets the 3%? And is this a private entity that's been granted this interest rate? And I mean, most homeowners right now are at 6%+. So I'm trying to find out why we're not capturing market value.
Okay. So,
excuse me.
Madeline Bryan. Project coordinator with Health and Human Services. So the funding terms are dictated by the grant. QHA requires that any funding given to a development project be done in the form of a low interest deferred loan. So that restricts, you know, the interest that can be collected on it, and that interest goes to the county. The fine details of those type of loan agreements are worked out over months when the documents are drafted. This is just a letter of commitment, so the exact details haven't been drafted at all yet because the project is still in the initial conceptual stages. But the terms that are in that letter are copied from the Permanent Local Housing Allocation Guidelines.
And how does it translate down to, I guess, the consumer level who may be renting or being housed in this development? Does that 3% come to them as well, or does the entity have the ability to charge market rate?
No, they're not allowed to charge market rate. The building has, it's restricted to people who are only making below a certain income level and meet other criteria. And if they were to charge any rent, because in some cases the individual may not make enough income to have any rent charged, they couldn't charge more than 30% of the person's income. That's kind of the standard from housing and urban development guidelines.
Okay. And there's no escalator in there over 55 years for more than 3%.
And they won't start paying it off initially. It's a deferred loan. So they get the project up and running, and at some point they begin paying back the loan.
Okay, thank you.
Move to approve.
Second.
All righty, Supervisor Help. Okay. Supervisor Kopsa?
No.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes. Okay, we're going to move on to item 6A. Siskiyou MODOC Regional Department of Child Support Services. A long time, Mr. Sam.
Yes, a long time. I don't get up here much. So.
But it's nice to stay off the radar screen. No one's calling any questions. I haven't got any calls. You're doing a great job. Keep it up.
Yep. Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. I'm just going to give you an update on our department and probably a little bit of history as well, because, like you said, I don't appear here that often. Anyway.
Officially, for the record, if you'd let us know your name.
Okay. Gary Sams, Regional Director.
It has been a real long time.
yes, sir. Just basic history. We're a regionalized agency. We regionalized with MODOC County back in 2002 when the state created the State Department of Child Support Services and created individual departments at the local level for child support, taking us out of the district attorney's office. Our mission is to promote parental responsibility to enhance the well-being of children by providing child support services to establish parentage and collect child support. I want to start off with some urban myths that are out there regarding child support. We are not child protective services. We are not social services, and we are not foster care services. That tends to be a confusion at the state level, even at the federal level, when it comes to child support services. We only help moms. That's false. Approximately 15% of the parents statewide that receive child support payments are fathers. We only help people on welfare. That is false. In 2020, over 256,000 families statewide who never received public assistance benefited from our program. Child support orders are set in stone. That's false. Modifications are continually done if there's a change of circumstances and either one of the parties requests a change. And child support just wants to punish men. That's been a stigma out there. That's false. And in 2000, when it was taken out of the district attorney's office, the focus was shifted to work with both parents equally. What do we do? Establish and enforce child support orders for child support. Enforce court orders for child support. We do that via monetary orders or legal parentage, health insurance coverage, and medical expenses. Some facts. Child support and what we do. The support amount is set by the court. Child support gathers the facts, works with the customers on the cases to present that to the court for a determination of what a court order would be. Either parent can open up a case. It's not just the parent that's considered a custodial parent, but a non-custodial parent can open up a case as well. Modification, we review court orders continually to modify up or down based upon new circumstances. We are a neutral party. We do not represent either party legally. We do not provide legal advice. We do help with communications between the parties and negotiations between the parties if they're willing to negotiate on their court order. Stipulations, that's when two parties come together and agree without going to court. We just received the highest percentage of stipulation rate for very small counties in the state, 47% stipulation rate on our court orders, which kind of shows that the parents are working together to achieve a right-sized order. We do the financial accounting for tracking payments that are made and received. We conduct genetic testing if that's required. And we also do the voluntary declaration of parentage program with the hospitals. When a child is born, typically the hospitals will present a voluntary declaration of parentage to the parents if they're not married. To sign if they want to agree to be the parents of the child. What we don't do divorces. We don't do custody and visitation. We get that quite often with customers coming in regarding custody and visitation, but we do not get involved in that. We do not get involved in restraining orders, and we do not establish spousal support. We do enforce spousal support if there is a child support order as well. By the numbers, currently we have 2,450 cases. Of those cases, we serve 2,226 children in Siskiyou and Modoc counties. A number of those children that are born out of wedlock is 1,541. 650 total parents paying support live outside of California. And 447 parties receiving support live outside of California. So quite a few of our customers don't live in Siskiyou County. They live in other parts of California or outside the state or even outside of the country as well. So that does create a lot of jurisdictional issues that we have to stay up on with other states because they don't do it the same way we do. So it all depends on who has jurisdiction over the case when the legal process is coming in. We have 166 cases where we are enforcing for another state, and we have 346 cases where we have asked the other states to enforce for us. The other parties live in the other state, and we're asking for their help. 16 full-time authorized staff. We are 80% staffed at this moment. Our staffing is based upon a case ratio, a formula from the state, and so the state basically dictates how much staff that you can have based upon the number of cases and some other factors on that. Our total collections for fiscal year 2022 was $4,137,000 and some change, and we're 100% funded by the federal and state government. So there is no county general funding in our program. Some successes that we've had recently. We have a debt reduction program that we are the state is offering. It used to be a compromise of arrears program several years ago. Recently, it's changed to a debt reduction project, which takes into account the ability of the customers pay. So it's for low-income customers. So if they owe any debt to the state is willing to forgive a portion of that debt based upon an offer that the customer would give. And there's an income calculator tool that you use on that. It's a very good program for some of these individuals, especially individuals that are on Social Security or something like that, that have very low income to wipe their debt off. Pass-through increase in January 1st, 2022, those customers that are receiving cash assistance and that were enforcing the child support order, they used to get a $50 disregard if we collected monies against that current obligation. It was increased in January 1st to $100 for one child or $200 for two children. And so that put more money back into families' pockets to help them while they were receiving assistance. We recently started enforcing what they call Smith-Osler cases. A lot of counties don't enforce these because they're very complicated. However, we've taken it upon, we're enforcing these, and these are usually high-end cases where there's a lot of bonuses, overtime, or commissions earned by the paying parent at some point in time of the year. And so our orders have a percentage of that we can collect on and give to the families. The simplified enrollment process, the state just implemented this about a year ago. We came up on it about 4 or 5 months ago. It's kind of like a TurboTax program for customers to go in, apply by their phone or on the computer. It's much simpler than what it was, giving them 50 pages of paper to fill out, and very complex. So this has been a simplification of the application process for customers. California lags behind the nation in servicing those customers that need service out there. And so the state is looking at how can we draw in those customers to receive our services and make it easier for them. We have a job search program. This was pretty much on hiatus during the COVID times. However, we just recently started this back up, and what this is if an individual can't pay their child support because they don't have a job, we work with them and through the court process to get them a job and maintain a job so that they can pay their child support. And so we've had some successes this year on this. It's not easy with the ability of jobs out there and people wanting to work or anything, but we have found some successes this year on that. Transformation, the child support program statewide is transforming to be less enforcing, more softer, I guess you would say, becoming more lenient on license releases. That's one of our biggest enforcement items that we have is suspending driver's licenses for lack of payment. However, the state is looking at a more lenient process on that. The feds state that you have to have a process, but they don't dictate how that process should run. And so the state is looking at revising that. They did revise the bank levy procedures in 2021, which decreased how many people receive bank levies, but increase the amount of collections that we receive from bank levies. It sounds like an oxymoron, however, they were sending out levies on to bank accounts that didn't even have any money on them, or maybe only had $100 in them. And the banks were charging $120, $150 fees to the customers, so child support wasn't getting any of that money. So they changed that, the logic on that, so they only send out levies on if past due balances are greater than $3,500 and their bank account has more than $3,500 in it. And so that lessened the amount of levies, but increased the amount of monies that were collected. So it was a great success. And also family-centered services, working more with other agencies regarding jobs and parenting and custody and visitation, and using those services before going into the heavy enforcement part of child support. And prioritizing payments to families, and that is what is coming up next as far as former assistance pass-through, which is going to happen in May of 2024. In May of 2024, the state has elected to pass the monies to families that is collected that were formally assisted, but the debt is owed to the state. So the state says, we don't want the money anymore, we're going to give it to the families to help them be more self-sufficient and to stay off of public assistance. And so When I started this job, that was one of the things that I said I would retire when this happens, because I wanted it to happen, and it's coming to fruition. This and interest, so those are the two things. Get rid of interest and pass the money to the family so that the money goes to where it's needed. And so it's working its way there. So I'm getting excited. I'm a little gray here. So,
Mr. Sam, that's why you came and gave a presentation to tell us you're going to retire?
No.
Okay. But you, I remember before when I used to come and visit you,
yeah,
you mentioned that. You mentioned how this long process to get there.
Yeah. No, every meeting I go to at the state, we got to do this. We got to do this. And, you know, the last 3 years is take some of these ideas are coming to fruition from the last 3 years because everybody's looking at doing something different. Because what we were doing just wasn't hitting the grade. And so, and then in January 1st of 2025, they are going to pass through all the money, even if the family is currently assisted on receiving cash aid. Any monies that we collect that is a state debt will be passed through the families as well. And the whole idea is to make families more self-sufficient, get the monies in the children's hands. And over the years, over the last 20 years, recoupment, what they call collecting on the state debt, has declined because there's less and less of those type of cases coming in. And so, so they made a decision. However, this is contingent upon the state's budget, which at this point in time doesn't look that great. So there would have to be a drastic turnaround in next fiscal year for the governor to say, okay, let's go with it. Federal government came through in 2016 changing their rules regarding child support and encouraging state, well, it encourages, they mandated states to accept these rules and put them in process, and California has just done that. It's being more flexible with your child support program, being more efficient and modernizing it. The rules were written in 1975, and they really haven't changed since then, so it's about time to change those rules because that was a long time ago. And one of those rule changes is we will no longer be using presumed income, which is 40 hours minimum wage if a person doesn't have any income or we can't find any income or anything like that. So it's presumed, okay, you can work 40 hours minimum wage. Well, that's really not reality. It may be in some counties, but not in all counties, especially not here in Siskiyou County, as far as, you know, everybody can go out and get a 40-hour job at minimum wage. It's just not that way. Uncollectible debt, the state is working on this. The governor wants this to happen. Yes?
Just back up just a minute.
Yeah.
Did I hear correctly that 40-hour week jobs aren't available?
No.
All right.
It's not everybody can get 40 hours.
Okay.
You know, and stuff. And so they are available. I mean, there's jobs out there available. But the idea that they all have insurance, they all have this, and they all have that, that is not just presume that anybody can work a 40-hour job. You would hope that anybody could get a 40-hour job, but there's some people that you know, they can only work 20 hours, 30 hours, or something like that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Uncollectible debt, the governor wants child support to look at this, and basically it has to do with the bad policies back in the 70s and 80s that were implemented, and so they're looking at getting rid of a lot of this uncollectible debt that is owed to the state, and they're going to be looking at the first individuals that receive supplemental security. Security income, that's their only income. You know, they don't have the ability to pay this huge debt that's accumulated over time based upon bad policy years and years ago. And so they're looking at veterans' disability benefits, cash assistance program for immigrants, and so this will be coming down the pike. It hasn't come to fruition yet, but they're looking at getting rid of this past debt. All the studies have showed that debt owed to the state of California, child support debt, you're only going to be able to collect 10% of it over time. I mean, that's studies since early 2000s all the way to now. Is you can hammer all you want, but these individuals just don't have the money to pay the debt owed to the state that far back. Some of the challenges that we're facing, unhoused customers, it's challenging to locate them, to get them the information. One of the issues that we're finding on customers that may be living in hotels or anything like that, post office won't deliver the mail there. They used to years ago, but they won't deliver their mail there anymore because that is not their home. You know, it's temporary. And so trying to get information to customers and finding them and locating them is very difficult in this day and age. Inflation, increased cost of living affects both customers and staff and their ability to pay. Technology has been a big one for staff. It seems like every month there's a new program, new software. The state is pushing, and our state director is very big in technology right now. And I don't know how you feel about technology. I'm 65 years old, and I'm tired of it. And when I have to learn something new every month, it just wipes me out. And customers as well. We have customers ranging from 90 years old down to 16, 17 years old. And the way the state has, everything has to be done on the phone. You know, everything's going to the telephone, the cell phone, so you have to work off the phone. Well, if you're 90 years old, that's difficult. I mean, I find it difficult as well. But that does keep everybody on edge of learning technology consistently. And then last, health and welfare of the workforce. I find this to be tough for internal staff because the cost of commute has come up tremendous. Lack of daycare. There's been a daycare program in Wairika that has limited their daycare operations, and it's really affected staff. What do I do now? Of course, understaffing is always a challenge, and burnout. Burnout from technology, worrying about other things, not coming to the back door and leaving your personal life out there and just concentrating on work. That don't happen anymore. You're just constantly flooded with all those stresses of the outside life. And the customers are facing this as well. And it affects their ability to pay child support. So, I encourage anything that we can do to help customer workforce in the county and also staffing workforce, anything that we can do to help staff in those areas. And that's about it. And your support helps Children Shine. So every 5 years when I come up here, ask for your support or anything like that, I greatly appreciate it. And I'd also like to introduce two of my staff members that came. They're, like I said, I'm getting gray, and the time is coming. And so that's my future there. And Katie Black, the attorney that has been on staff for a couple of years now, and Shannon Martin, my program manager, who put together this presentation. I just wanted to get them introduced to you at this point in time.
Nice. Any questions from the board?
In regards to employment, you said you're able to find jobs for 5 out of 7 folks to over 6 months?
Well, it's a job search program, so we take them to court, basically. And the court orders them to look for jobs. So basically, it's a enforcement mandated thing. Go out and look for jobs and stuff. So we continually stay on top of them, go out and look for jobs, go out and look for jobs. In the past, when we would do job searches for individuals, the court would order them to go for jobs. They'd say, okay, who cares? I can care less about what the court says or anything like this. However, we've had success lately of individuals actually going to look for jobs, and getting jobs, and maintaining those jobs so that we can get an income withholding order in place to garnish their wages for child support. And so these individuals want to pay their child support, however, they don't have the capability. We have a subset of customers that want to pay their child support, but they don't have the resources to do that, so we work real hard with them. We have customers who want to pay their child support and do pay their child support, and we have those that don't want to pay their child support and don't have the means to pay their child support. And then we have those that have the means to pay their child support but don't want to pay. And those are the ones that we really have to, you know, you have the money, you need to pay. So that's where the bank levies come in, and driver's license and everything, and those enforcement tactics on those that do have the ability to pay but don't want to pay. And then we have to use those type of enforcement tactics to get them kind of on board with the program.
The thing, do you work with anybody for the job searches, or is it all within your department?
Well, Shannon is, Shannon and the attorney is individual. So you want to come up, talk a little bit about job search?
She can't.
Well, that's right. She's got
can I speak from here? We do work with local, like the SMART and the workforce through the county that provides a weekly job list. They also help the customers, like, prepare resumes, prepare for interviews. So we provide those resources and referrals to the customer to utilize those other resources within the county to assist them in finding the employment, which really does help. And some of the customers recently really just needed a little bit of hand-holding and motivation. You know, coming out of COVID, people were not working, and it was just really hard to get back in the saddle and get back into a daily routine, and they just needed somebody to help them out. So. And on our slide, it was 5 out of 7 were successful. The other two, one of them is incarcerated and will be for quite some time, and then 1 out of 7 was the only one that we just had to drop from the program because it was not successful.
Oh, it was 7 total? Okay.
Yes.
Oh, gotcha. Right.
Yes.
I thought it was just a figure 5 out of 7, but
yeah.
You know, for the kids, probably help for adults too. There's a program called Siskiyou Works. And I don't know if you've partnered with them for the 16, 17, 18, 19 year olds. It might be a great partnership.
Yes, they have a big grant specifically, I believe, for that age group.
Yeah.
The Works program does. And I believe that's who we get the job list from. The county job list. Yes.
I just wondered who you partnered with. Is you guys are able to do that?
Yeah. And actually, we do have a court process where, we use it in our license releasing. An individual come in and say, I'd like to get my license released. So we'll say, well, you need to make a payment. So I can't make a payment. I said, well, here's an option. You can go down, you know, to Siskiyou Works or the SMART program and go through their program of getting you a job, working up with resumes and stuff like that. Most of them tend to say, okay, yeah, I guess I don't need my license that bad. It's tough getting people to motivate to go do something. Fill out a piece of paper. That's like on the debt reduction program. Very easy. Give me a minimal offer. I've seen offers $200, get rid of $30,000. It's a huge, but it's based upon your income. So people who are, you know, only making $1,000 a month, the state says, hey, you know what, we don't want you saddled with this debt. We want you to move on. But you got to fill out a piece of paper, and you have to bring in, you know, backup documentation and stuff. And that's where things tend to drop off is because you have to do something to move forward. So.
I appreciate your answer. Thank you.
And then I'll just let you know, Shannon just graduated from college. She's been working really hard at that. And then I guess right after she graduated, she broke her foot.
True story.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you, Mr. Sims.
Thank you.
Nice meeting you, ladies. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.